There were warning signs, but nobody really noticed them. I mean, looking back now, people can say, oh, I know exactly why it happened. For a lot of people, they looked into the science of metallurgy and they said, you know what, it was the rivets. The rivets, that was the real problem, because that affected the integrity of the entire structure. Others said, no, it really was the metal plates. These steel plates, they really weren't prepared for the conditions that they would face. Some said, well, it was just superstition. That any time a ship on its maiden voyage has a near collision coming out of harbor, you know something bad is going to happen. Others say it was the calm sea that didn't prepare them for what lied ahead. Others said it was the fact that they simply grazed the iceberg rather than hitting it head on, which caused a 300-foot gash in the side of the boat. Maybe it was just the fact that it was too big to imagine that anything bad could happen to the RMS Titanic, which measured in at 882 feet long, nearly three football fields. And if that isn't amazing enough, its height measured over 175 feet tall. It was nearly 18 stories tall. Weighing in at 52,000 tons, which translates to about 100 million pounds. Surely that had something to do with the fateful night of April 15th, 1912. Maybe it was the 21 knots, the 24 miles per hour that they went as they glided through icy conditions. Some suggest it had to do with the fact that people were just too arrogant to believe that anything could happen to this beautiful, gigantic ship. A ship which had a capacity of over 3,000, if you included the crew. On its maiden voyage, it had 2,224 people. The amount of people on the boat was pretty spectacular. The capacity of the lifeboats was a little less than spectacular. Because of their arrogance, they never thought they would use these life rafts. There were 20 of them, bringing a total capacity to just over 1,100 people. When the warning bell did sound and people shuffled their way up the deck, those who were allowed to, they slowly got into the rafts. The first life raft had a capacity of 65. It pushed away from the Titanic with only 28 in it. In 160 minutes, in just under 3 hours, 1,500 people died as the Titanic sank. What caused it? Why did it happen? This would bring about multiple inquiries from boards trying to figure out how this happened. Why did 1,500 people have to die? Couldn't something have changed it? Welcome to the book of Amos. What do we know about the book of Amos? Do we know anything? I'll tell you one fact that you're really going to like about the book of Amos. In Arlington, Texas, where I grew up, I attended Amos Elementary. That's all I've got. We know very little about the book of Amos, just 9 chapters long. It's kind of stuck with all the other minor prophets, and we really don't know where it fits in. Now, we're going to go into detail in Bible class, and I don't want to give away any of the good stuff. I got to leave the carrot dangling for you to join us in Bible class afterwards. But right now, I want to talk about really what was Amos all about. There are really 4 significant things that we read about in the book of Amos: injustice, empty religion, punishment by God, and a call to repentance. So, what was this great injustice that Amos, a prophet from the south, would go to the north, to Israel, and prophesy against them for? How about this? "They do not know how to do right, declares the Lord, who hoard, plunder, and loot in fortresses. You women who oppress the poor and crush the needy, and say to your husband, 'Bring us some drinks.' You trample on the poor and force them to give you grain. You lie on beds inlaid with ivory and lounge in your couches. You dine on choice lambs and fattened calves. You strum away on your harps like David and improvise on musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowlful and you use the finest lotions. But you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph." Hear this. "You who trample the needy and who do away with the poor in the land, saying, 'When the new moon will be over, then we will sell our grain, and the Sabbath be ended, that we may market wheat, skimping the measure, boosting the price, and cheating with dishonest scales, buying the poor with silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, selling even the sweepings with wheat.'" Those are just a few examples of the injustice that had taken place. And you say, well, you know, that's not the worst. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's not the worst. Because listen what God has to say, not about what they do on Monday through Saturday, but what they do on the holy day. He says, I despise your religious feasts. I cannot stand your assemblies. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps, but let justice roll on like a river. Let righteousness like a never-ending stream. You see, God is also going to say in Amos, He says through the prophet, He says, "I have chosen you as a people, but you have been unjust." He doesn't say, "I'm glad that you show up to worship me. Thank you for the offerings that you give me." He says, "I despise them and I hate them. I will not listen to your songs. They're worthless to me." It's another harsh book that we read about. What does God really want from us? He sure is expecting a whole bunch, isn't He? I mean, give them a little bit of a break, right? So what? They like to lay on their couches. But God says, that's not what I've called you to. And there's an example that He's going to use in the book of Amos. That some of you, if you've read Amos, you're going to be familiar with this. But some of you haven't, so I want to take the opportunity to familiarize you with this. So, Mr. Harrison, will you come up and help me for just a second? After what I did to Raul a couple weeks ago, was it last week? I don't know that you should want to come up here. So I've got the, a little see what. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. Your job is to take this 2x2, and I want you to stand it up straight. Okay? You just get it as straight as you can. Now, one thing that might help you is kind of, if you get it, see, make sure, pay attention to right, there you go. See how it's flat there? That's really about right. Does that look good? That looks pretty good. Does that look good? Don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. What are you? Are your shoes the same size? That are you sure that looks a little crooked? Okay, so what's really going on in the book of Amos? Well, God has an indictment against them. And he says, here's the deal. The problem is you are using your own standard by which to measure things. And he says, this is not really the way we are to measure things. And so he gives an example. This too is bad luck. So I'll try not to get it, like, don't go under this. Right? You don't go under a ladder or cross a black cat or anything like that. In the book of Amos, there are going to be several different examples that God gives the prophet to help the people understand what's going on. The first, he says, there is going to be this plague of locusts. And this locust is going to come, and it's going to just completely obliterate all the land. And the prophet is going to say, no, no, don't stop. And in his vision, you know, God relented. And then after that says, that's not really going to happen. I'm not going to relent. And he says, another one, he says, okay, then there's this fire that comes down from heaven and it's destroying everything. And the prophet says, no, no, God, stop. And the Lord relents. And then God says, no, no, that's not going to happen either. And then he talks about this little gizmo right here. This is called a what? A plumb bob, okay? That has nothing to do with the name of the guy who comes and fixes your toilet. It's a plumb bob. And what this does is this creates a straight line based on, don't you be looking at the line. Your job was to make sure that was straight. And now all of a sudden you're trying to straighten it out a little bit. Now if I can get that thing from stop wiggling, there we go. These really aren't used just a whole lot unless you're building something really big. If you're building something small, you just grab a level. But this helps us out to see when something is straight. Now you're going to have to move your little digits out of the way because I want to get this really close. There you go. There you go. Okay. I'm having trouble, but from here it looks like it's off. Now, if I'm completely honest, I may have cheated just a little bit. As I took this piece of wood that was perfectly 90 degrees on both sides, I might have accidentally cut it at just like a 1 degree difference so that when you set it flat on there, it doesn't really match up. And God is going to say here, I want you to live your life not based on what you think is right, but what I know is right. God's first complaint against them is, you don't even know how to do right. You see, God's really going to focus on Israel with this whole idea of having this empty religion. He says, don't do it. He's going to say, don't show up to the temple to worship if you're not going to treat the people around you with kindness and mercy. Why does he ask us to do this? Why? Why does he ask so much of us? Doesn't he understand that this is difficult? That it's too hard to do? Why would he call us not only to show up to church and read our Bibles and pray, but then we have to go out and be nice to other people? Doesn't that seem like that's asking a little much? Does he really know our neighbor? Does he really struggle with falling asleep because the dog next door won't stop barking? Does he know what it's like to stand in line at the post office while you see other people cutting in front of you? My Christianity was challenged about 2 weeks ago. I mean, in a real way. Normally, it's when I drive through the school zone and I see people doing knuckleheaded things. It just drives me crazy. But just the other day, Lily went up to the junior high, which makes me shudder because she's way too young to be in junior high, but she's going to be starting next year. And one of the things that they do in junior high for most people is they have an opportunity to be in the band, okay? This is foreign to me, okay? The only thing that I can play really well is the radio. But yet they have all these different instruments for Lily to try out. And she went in there saying, I want to play the trumpet. I'm sorry. Yeah, the thing that does this. That's the because the trombone does this. She wants, I'm sorry, I'm so illiterate. I wish I knew this better, but I don't. Okay, I know a piano. Okay, so she wants to play this. And normally, I'm being chauvinistic, but normally the girls do this and this, and the guys do this and this, right? Okay, so, but this is what she wants to do. And so she's practicing. She goes up there, and she's waiting in line. And to be honest, it was a little chaotic. Okay, to be honest, it was way chaotic. There was not really any sort of system for this to happen. People just walked in. And we were pretty early, and there were a couple people ahead of us, and I said, well, where's the line? And they said, well, you just kind of figure out who got there before you, and then you know you go after them. But it didn't really work that way, because we were the third people in line, and after about seven people, we're still sitting there watching these kids go, you know, and I'm like, oh, I can't take this anymore. And I'm like, I'm going to get one of those trumpets, and I'm going to toot my horn. Like, this ain't right. So we had to sit there. Why do I have to do that? I worship on Sunday. Do I have to deal with people kindly the rest of the week? Isn't singing a song enough? Isn't praying enough? I'm a faithful attender. We should have membership cards. That's what we need. So that you can flash them around. Yeah, I'm cutting in line because I go to church on Sunday. Are you holding that straight? Don't slack on your job. That's your job. What is this really all about? What is this? What is Christianity? Why are we called to do these things? Why are there Ten Commandments? Why do we look in the New Testament at all these things that we're called to do? If somebody hits you on the cheek, turn the other as well. If somebody wants to steal your coat, let them have your cloak as well. If somebody forces you to go 1 mile with them, go with them 2 miles. Why? Why would God call us to do this? Because that is what God does for us. That's why we show mercy. That's why we show kindness. It's not about what we think is right. It's about what God did for us. Why do we have to be the kind to the people who are mean to us? Because Jesus stayed on a cross while people spit on Him and they called Him names and they laughed at Him. And Jesus says, this is God. That God shows mercy. Amos is going to be written about 4 decades before the northern kingdom will be obliterated and never come back. But God continued to send them signs. He says, listen, repent. Your religion is empty and you're unjust to people. You cheat on the scales and you can't wait to buy the needy and sell them as slaves. But let me tell you something. You can come back. I call you back into relationship. We're not here because we're punching a clock. That's not what this is about. We're here to be reminded and encouraged of what God did for us. And what did He do for us? He gave everything. Just yesterday, I had an opportunity to share a devotional, a talk with some people, and I confess that one of my big struggles in my life has just always been this insurmountable insecurity that I feel, just almost from the very beginning, and how I've really struggled with that, and how Satan never had to yell at me. He didn't even have to talk to me. He just whispered a few words, and I took it. The words that said, "You're worthless and you're no good." And it didn't take long for that to be my song of woe is me, I'm no good, and all I wanted to do was to be accepted. And any time I heard the story of grace, I believed it for other people, but it never caught on with me because there's no way that God could love me because I'm worthless. Imagine a scene. That you're at an auction, but rather than items being up for bid, it's people. But you're not holding the bidder's paddle, you're the one being auctioned off. Can you imagine standing before a group of people, broken, old, useless, sitting there and hearing silence? Would anybody pay $10? Would anybody pay $5? Will anybody pay $1? And finally someone at the back stands up and says, "I'll pay $10 million for that person." And the whole crowd goes, and they turn around and look, and the person says, "Yes, I want that person." And the gavel hits the wood, and people stand up, amazed. Some whisper, "Is he really worth that much?" Others clap. And you walk over to the person who bought you and you look them in the eye and you say, "I'm sorry, I'm just unworthy." And the buyer says, But wait, I bought you. I paid for you. I gave all that I have so that you could come be with me." And you say, "Oh no, I can't do it. I'm not good enough." Maybe you should have paid more for me. We stand before God. And when the world says we're worthless, when our sins speak out against us, when we know that we're not worthy to be taken home to heaven, God says, "I'm buying you. Not for what the world thinks you're worth, but for how I value you. You see, you're my child, and I'm giving my son up for you." Are you going to walk up to Him and say, "Oh man, you should have paid more for me because I'm just not worth it"? You see, we are called to hold up who God is by the way we treat other people. That we're not just Sunday morning Christians. That we get to show God every day. I'm super excited. Harrison, thank you so much. You can have a seat. And I didn't even hurt you this time, did I? Not yet. Day ain't over yet. It was awful. Over 1,500 people lost their lives because of arrogance. They went down into the cold waters. And it would be another 70 years before the Titanic would be found. But it would never come back up again. Something really awesome is going to happen this morning. And it's going to start off looking a little bit like the Titanic. Partially because our water heater isn't working. And we have a cold, cold baptistry. And this morning, we have three young people who have said, I'm willing to go down into those icy waters. And I want to be buried. But this is where the story deviates from 1912. God says, I'm going to raise you back up. The psalmist says that he pulled me out of the muck and the mire and he gave me a firm place to stand. And these three young souls are going to rise again, brand new, new life. And they're going to have same struggles as they've had before. But you know what? They are going to be filled with the Spirit of Jesus Christ, which is promised for them, which has been promised for all of you. Maybe I'm downplaying this. Maybe there's not three. Maybe there's a fourth one in here. Or maybe you've been resurrected through baptism, but your religion has become empty and you've struggled. The great story about Amos is that God is going to use that story to reach another group of people and say, I will forgive and reconcile you. This morning, it's going to be a great morning. And my prayer for you is that you make this a day where you realize I'm not stuck down in the bottom of the ocean. That God has given me an opportunity not only to rise, but I get to show the world who He is and long for His appearing. This morning, if you want to rededicate your life, if you want to give it to Him in baptism and say, I'm ready to die, we want to encourage you to do that this morning as we stand and sing.